Let's go.
What is up? Welcome back to another episode of Bingetown TV. I am Paul, and here with me today are Dave and Brian.
Up, dog.
We're back with our Binge With Us series covering season two of Amazon's The Boys. Today we are covering episode six, titled The Bloody Door Is Off. Only two episodes left. What are we thinking, boys?
Crazy. There's only two episodes left. That's what I'm thinking. But I'm also thinking this is possibly my favorite episode of the entire series. I'm so excited about this episode. Everything happens. We finally got the, what would you even call it? The notorious Mallory flashback that we've been dying to get details of, this lamplighter situation since season one. Great episode.
Great episode. And I'm gonna have to follow that up with just saying, yeah, I agree. I'm just upset that there's only eight episodes in this season, but two more and
they're gonna
I don't even know what to expect, honestly, these two episodes.
We gotta cover this episode before we can because there are so many possible directions this can go. I mean, it opens up and I'm so upset that Kyle is not on this episode because this is just pure French raff. We all know how he loves it. And it's just young Frenchie. And this is 8 years ago, and he is just, you know, doing drugs, the usual shit. And we see he's with Cherie and this new person who we've never seen before. And he's talking about how when he grew up in New York, you know, he was turning tricks, like begging for food when he could. But there was, in the shelter, there was always Golden Girls on at night.
Always has his Golden Girls. Yeah, absolutely right. He said, Cherie, you are my Blanche. And you are my Dorothy, he says to Jay. And then they're like, well, what does that make you, Betty White? He says, what the fucking question? Of course I'm Betty White. I think it's Jay snorts a line of coke and then zooms in on Frenchie. Now, who wants to rob a bank?
Yeah, that was sweet.
This is flashback of Frenchie in the heyday, I guess, like before The Boys.
It's basically everything I expected it to be. Just Frenchie being Frenchie at his max because he's not being, like, you know, controlled or anything like that. But yeah. Frenchie was unbelievable in this scene. Absolutely loved him.
So funny. At one point, Jay calls them the Golden Shower Girls. And Frenchie turns around. He's like, that's disrespectful.
Don't dare disrespect them like that.
All right. So we know that they were getting into some shit 8 years ago. Fast forward. Next scene, we get Frenchie and Starlight's on like this workbench table.
Yeah. So we flash forward to Frenchie, Huey, and Annie. And Frenchie's getting out this saw looking razor blade type thing. Huey's getting squeamish. Frenchie is saying things to Huey like, this is your first time. I know it's different when it's someone you care about. Point of the story is they're trying to get this tracker out of Starlight's shoulder. And to get through a soup's super skin, it's pretty gruesome.
You need some power tools, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they were questioning if whether the thing was going to work. And he was like, if it's not going to work, then nothing will. And so we see it does actually work.
Eventually, though. I thought it wasn't going to work for a little bit. It was grinding the disc down, and all of a sudden it pops.
And then,
of course, blood gets on Huey's face. Like, if there's blood in the scene, it's getting on Huey's face.
His reaction was so funny, too.
He was so squeamish.
He was so squeamish, and then just immediately applies pressure to the wound and all this stuff. But so funny.
That was a big ass tracker too.
Yeah, he pulls it out with the tweezers. He says, "Bonjour, my little spy." Frenchie has some great quotes this episode. A very Frenchie centric episode, I would say.
Loved it. We were asking
much
for it.
Needed, yeah. Because we got a little bit of Mother's Milk backstory, not like to the extent of actual like flashbacks, but we got a little bit of that, and we just had not had any questions answered about Frenchie, so it's cool
for sure. Moving on, we go to Homelander and Stormfront, and they are engaging. A robber looks just like a small operation guy, maybe
average Joe.
Stuck up a corner store, and he's like freaking out with like a couple 20s in his hands. Worst luck. Runs into Stormfront and Homelander, and
at the height of their
horny.
Yeah, I was just gonna say at the height of their relationship,
and not giving a fuck about human life. Yeah, that's for sure.
Because he brings out the gun and Stormfront smacks it out of his hand and just with that smack breaks his arm.
Shatters
his hand. Yeah. Just he's like begging for hospital assistance. And
he was just like, come on, please help me. And they're like, what are we going to do with him? Should we call the authorities? Well, he'll probably just be out in the street in a few weeks.
He says something so messed up, the two of them. Sometimes it feels like the justice system just doesn't work anymore. And then they in unison say, everyone recording on their phone all the time. It's like you can't even do your job anymore.
She's rubbing his cock.
Yeah, a little OTPHJ action.
Diabolical OTPHJ.
Yeah, so good. It literally causes Homelander to squish his head.
Yeah, and you think he came, though, with that?
But nothing's hotter, apparently, than doing it over a person you just killed, because that's the first urge they have. A Homelander's pants are halfway down his thigh. It looks like he's Butters at the urinal in South Park with his pants all the way down. It's so weird. It's so weird.
They're kissing each other, and the guy's blood is just all over their mouths, and they're just making out.
Why, dude?
This was like perfect transition just from their sex from last episode, just because it's just them being full on soups, just using their powers whenever they can, even during sex.
And just highlighting that they're also both crazy
and sociopaths. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was getting to. It's just they're both sociopaths. Exactly.
This is where we get the iconic The Boys, the opening credits roll. There's no credits. I call it the credits.
Two words.
And in the background, the song, I Can't See Me Loving Nobody But You, is playing. I love the music this season. It's been on point, kind of like the retro throwback kind of stuff. But
I remember it being this well done in the first season.
It's more obvious, I think, is what it is. Like they're kind of focusing it, but they've been killing it. Especially
when it ties in with like their personalities. Like Huey's a big Billy Joel guy, obviously. So it obviously ties in with their personalities. But it just makes the shows that much better. It gets you hype
for sure. Next scene we have is at the boys' hideout, and this is Annie's first time making it to the hideout.
Real quick, we do get Homelander and Stormfront in an interview together, and it's on a TV screen, and it zooms out, and just from the few interactions they Stormfront and Homelander had together, you know, touching each other's legs or giggling at each other, Butcher and Kimiko look at each other. Goes, they're fucking.
Yeah,
like they just know from that, like they're insane.
You were able to see the sexual tension in past episodes, so they definitely could see it too on TV,
and they're both so pissed about it too.
Yeah, they were so upset.
But B-Toms, as you were saying, this is when Annie comes in,
right? And Huey says, don't worry about the rats, they're just like Pokemon with Hep C. Annie is just thinking to herself, I can't believe you guys are living here. Like, these are dire straits that the boys are living in. Anyway, Annie meets Kimiko again, and
she says remember me. And then after a while, Kimiko does go in and give her a hug, because we're not sure what's going to happen. When she says that, is she referring to when Kimiko was caught by Vought? She was kind of on the table, like under drugs, like being held under by drugs, and then MM went to save her with Frenchie and Huey. Is that what she's referring to?
I think she was probably just referencing the day that Kenji died, and they were all in like the sewers together, because Annie was there as Starlight with the Seven, but like Kimiko was there as well. And I think the reason they didn't know how that interaction was going to go was because maybe Kimiko blamed her for killing Kenji or that death or something like that. But obviously no hard feelings. Yeah. I completely forgot that Starlight was there for that when they saved her that first time. So it could have been that.
Well,
because honestly, when I was watching the scene, I was like, I don't even remember them meeting other than like the sewer. And there was like, because Kimiko gave her like a really heartfelt, like she was holding her hands and everything. And I was like, I couldn't piece together. But yeah, exactly. It might be what you were saying, Paul.
But at the same time, I think Kimiko was knocked out because of the drugs. But whatever. Yeah. We can look that up.
The point of that scene was there's no hard feelings between the two. And Kimiko is accepting.
Which is sweet.
Someone who is not accepting is our boy Billy Butcher, though. And he is immediately just confrontational, being just so rude and mean. Looks Huey straight in the eyes, just like, what's Annie doing here? What's she doing here?
He's just being himself, as always. Butcher's just not one to get along with others.
Huey's like, you know, don't worry. We took out the chip. We know what you're going to say. Like, look, she's fine. And then to get on Butcher's good side, Annie says, well, you know what? Like, I can help. I broke into Stormfront's laptop, and I know there was a bunch of emails from Edgar. And she was saying they were close to a breakthrough at this place called Sage Grove Center.
It's a psychiatric hospital. in Pennsylvania.
Let's go. Shout out PA. We do want to reiterate, it is a psychiatric hospital, because last episode we said that, and then we were like, oh wait, no, it's a hospital. It is actually a psychiatric ward. we find out all the patients inside.
Yeah, we see.
There's one detail that I didn't even catch in this conversation. Emily actually showed it to me. Butcher calls Annie chum. She's like, oh, chum, like early in the relation or in that conversation. Jesus. And later on at the end of this conversation, he says, you know, Annie's coming with us if we're going to Sage Grove, because if we go in there and get caught, we're going to give her over to Vaught and be like, look at the soup that turned on you. So, like, you don't jump into shark water without bait.
Yeah, I really like that line.
Butcher referred to her as chum earlier in this scene.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, actually. Oh, I did not pick up on that. Yes.
Like, okay, I see what you're saying.
And he brings it back full circle. Yeah. Don't come in without chum. Ah, that's good. Emily showed you that?
Yeah.
Shout out, Emily.
Yeah, Shout out, Emily.
So, that, I mean, just little shit like that is just so awesome to have in the show.
It shows the attention to detail the writers have when, you know, it's not just spitting. Just nonsense.
I mean, it's not like the pinnacle scene of the episode. Like, they're putting in these details in every little section.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. Like, the little poster in the back of the Haitian King's hideout of Liberty, or I'm sorry, of Pop Claw being the actress in a film. Like, that shit's so cool.
Yeah, it's all great.
But Annie is now going to be coming on her first official The Boys mission. I know she's, like, been around them on some of their shenanigans, but this is her official one, being with the boys for a mission.
Yeah,
right?
She's been indirectly working, like, because she's worked with Huey, she's technically kind of worked with the boys too, but yeah, first time.
Count it.
Yeah, count
Chalk
it.
Chalk one up for Annie / Starlight. Moving on, we have Maeve and the Deep in Maeve's trailer, and Maeve says to him, he kind of walks into the trailer. She says, what are you doing? You can't be seen here. He's like, I'm allowed to see my friends. Nobody's going to stop me from seeing an old friend, Maeve.
Yeah.
Maeve is watching on TV a commercial for Brave Maeve bars. Just
Brave Maeve Pride bars. And it's the cheesiest shit ever.
Oh, my God. I didn't even realize that.
Maeve must hate her life right now. Oh, I couldn't 100%. Imagine just being outed and flaunted like a...
Yeah.
It's
like,
horrible.
She's being portrayed as this just like focused only on being... lesbian, which even she's, yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, but yeah, exactly, she is just not happy.
So Maeve's like, all right, Deep, did you do it? And he was like, well, no, unfortunately, no black box, but I did find something else. So I talked to my guys, right? Like, the School of Halibut, they're these rowdy motherfuckers, right?
And he cuts them off. She's like, Deep, come on.
Yeah, shut the
fuck about your fish.
I love the Deep so much. So basically, he pulls out a GoPro and he was like, I found this in the wreckage, or one of my boys found this up in near Iceland. And basically, this is referring to the plane incident from season one, where Homelander and Maeve left all those people to die. She's bringing this back into play, which is, I never really saw this coming back.
They didn't explicitly say. We know that Deep and Maeve were planning on working together, but we didn't explicitly know that Maeve asked him to dig up dirt on Homelander. And now it's kind of coming full circle. Great play on Maeve's part, because she probably knew about where the plane went down, and the Deep is the only person who could possibly get to that wreckage. So that was Maeve making moves.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really good to see her. Like, we were talking about last episode, it was good to see Maeve kind of grow some balls and actually stand up to Homelander. And now we're seeing this plan come together, and I really hope it works out.
I unfortunately think Maeve might be a little out of her element taking on the big dog in Homelander. I hope it works out for her too. I don't think it's going to work out for her fully. I think between her and Elena, I'm not sure if they're both going to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Based off what we've seen, it's so hard. I'm with you, though. I don't think they're going to make it.
We got some more scenes from this. As of right now, the reveal is later that there's the plane wreckage video on the GoPro.
Yes.
We didn't really know what was up when we first saw this scene.
No. Live, right? I mean, when
I kind of had a, I feel like when I was watching, though, I kind of just assume that it was from the plane wreckage. Just,
when the Deep said the black box, that's usually like a sign of the plane wreck. Like the black box has all the information of everything that happened on the plane.
Right. Good on this scene.
Yes. Yep.
Moving on, we have Ashley and A-Train. Ashley, hot off of a really good Ashley episode too. And they're watching on an iPad some white dude rapping about A-Train.
It's actually not just any white guy. It's the actual music composer for The Boys.
Is it really?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's him, yeah.
Is that some Amazon trivia?
Yeah, the general trivia is back this week, baby.
Lovely. We love it. We missed it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Ashley, dude, do you have the line?
No, do you have the line?
She goes, isn't it lit? Your very own anthem, dude.
I cringed a little bit, actually, when she said that. But it's like she said it the way she's supposed to say it, you know? It's supposed to be cringy. Like,
they're going out to Lil Nas X for the recording, too.
Yeah. A-Train wasn't happy about that. I was like, I'd be so hyped.
A-Train is so over it right now.
That's also it, too.
He's learning how to deal with it. He's monotone, just saying things like, it's fine. It's okay. He's just trying to get through this right now. I really like where A-Train's at right now. He went from being like such an awful person and character to like a guy who's starting to get some redeemable qualities.
Yeah. The redemption's potentially there for A-Train, but we'll see how it goes.
Honestly, it's just him getting knocked off his pedestal.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the fastest man alive. That was everything. Now that he's the second, he doesn't have anything because nobody really cares about. I'm sure he's not even the second anymore. He can't even run.
Yeah. So he says to Ashley, I'm going to take a 10-1, which apparently means going to the bathroom. I had to look it up. He says, Ashley, I'm going 10-1. It means taking a bathroom
break. Is that just like a Hollywood thing? I've never heard that.
I have no clue. Yeah, I had to look it up, but that's what he says. It means I'm going on a bathroom break. As he's walking away, makes eye contact with Stormfront, who just gives him the absolute stink eye.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we know there's some button heads there.
Yeah, especially after last episode.
Yeah.
Sure. But as A-Train is walking away, somebody runs up to Ashley, and Ashley's like, don't tell me you haven't found Starlight yet.
Right.
So I like how they don't throw that in there right in your face, but they do have it in the background because, I mean, that's a huge plot hole. Like, Starlight has been not going to work basically every single day. So there's people looking for her. So that the fact that they addressed it makes me really happy.
I got mad parallels to season 1 when Stillwell was like, saying to Ashley, don't tell me you haven't found Translucent yet.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
That's
there
perfect. You go.
Yeah. Right? I never thought about that. Yeah. Okay.
I thought it was so funny, but I like that you highlighted that they didn't throw it in your face because it was real subtle.
Yeah.
In the background, Starlight's missing.
It's great. Where
Deep
was
rolls
that?
Up, though.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was getting at. So
dude,
A-Train's
the best quote coming up.
A-Train's walking away. And all of a sudden you hear, oh, the Deep, what? Like, he's like dabbing and shit. Yeah. And A-Train's like, get the fuck out of my face. He's like, what are you doing here?
He's just in his mood. He's not ready to talk to anybody.
Yeah. And the Deep, the worst undercover agent ever. He's like, oh, I'm just here to us. You know, I'm just around. Like, literally almost blows it. He's horrible.
I'm here to see Maeve.
I thought he was so good. I honestly thought that was quick thinking because he got asked point blank and he didn't have a reason.
But he like turned around and almost pointed. He was like, oh, I'm here to see nobody. But
yeah, no reason.
He immediately turns the tables and puts the onus back on A-Train. He says, hey, man, I've been thinking about you. I'm sorry. I see what Vought's trying to do to you. Yeah. Talk about being ass fucked with a soup can. Am I right?
Yeah, that was like
where the hell did that come from, D?
You hear that term or phrase a lot, but soup can, like, what the fuck? Like, where's that come
wild.
From? Yeah, he's just
Deep is a top three character for me right now.
I completely agree. Hated him so much season 1.
He, well, ever you had every so reason funny. To hate him.
Every
one.
Time he's on the screen, I am so happy.
Yeah,
like,
now it's just like, what's he up to? What's this guy doing?
So A-Train's like, dude, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I don't know what you're saying. I'm fine. And
Under Armour, Nike deals are coming in.
Yeah, yeah. And he's basically just in denial that he's basically getting kicked out.
I don't think it's denial. I think he's trying to keep up a positive attitude in front of the Deep.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's a better way because we did get that resolution last episode when he does give the speech in the movie. That is kind of him accepting it. So you're right.
Yeah, it's more of just an acceptance, I would say.
But the Deep says, oh, dude, that's great to hear. Well, I guess I guess you don't need his help. Or, you know, never mind. Forget I even said anything. A-Train turns
around.
That was
a great line for the Deep, too, because he, like, subtly snuck that in there. Yeah, yeah, he's just like, I'll make him a little interested. We'll see if he's interested, if he responds, like, who's he? And that's exactly what A-Train does.
Cast a line, walk away. Yeah. Wait, talk to who?
Yeah.
Would you like a fresco? Yeah. I lost it. Pulls it right out of his little knapsack satchel.
I was like, he's one of them, dude. He's one of them. Like,
I hope we get some more backslide on the fresco itself. I mean, it's still absolutely hilarious, but
I have accepted that it's just like
a thing.
The Church of the Collective's like Pavlonian dogs. Like, whenever they hear the bell, they expect food. Treat. Like, give them a fresco. Oh my god!
Offer a fresco.
Offer a fresco, and then just give them positive church vibes or something like that. That's what I think. Okay. It's like a very subtle sort of brainwashing.
Yeah, but. Definitely brainwashing. Yeah. Now confirmed brainwashing, definitely.
Maybe you associate the Church of the Collective with utter hydration.
Makes sense. There's more fresco later in the episode.
There is. Yeah.
So now we get the boys. They're in this stakeout van, and MM, the boss that he's on his laptop. He's researching. He's saying Sage Grove Center is a subsidiary of, can you guess it? And they're like, Vought. So now they are all dressed up in scrubs. It's MM, Frenchie, and Kimiko all dressed up in scrubs. They're ready to infiltrate
Sage Center.
Yeah. Kimiko has these brass knuckles, and Frenchie's like, what does that say? Does that say bossy? Like, this is what you're using your blood money, like your hit money for?
Bossy with dollar signs for the S's, too.
She gives like a little smile, and she's just like, yeah, this is what I'm doing with it. Get over it.
It's awesome.
Love that for Kimiko. Yeah. She's a little bit of a badass now.
Yeah.
I like where Kimiko's at too.
100% agree.
So they're going over their plan. Those three are infiltrating. Starlight's going down to help them get in. As they're leaving, Butcher makes it a point to stop Frenchie and say, like, hey, don't get caught. And he says, I never do.
And at that point in time, you obviously know they're going to get caught or something. Shit's going to hit the fan.
And Danny, importantly, is going to help them get in, but Butcher
she's not actually going.
She wants to go in with them. Butcher is really mean about shooting her down. So another scene where they butt heads.
He's just basically like, everyone in there would recognize you. There's no reason to go. He brings up a valid point. Like, yeah, but he says it like an
he's
ass.
He's so mean about it. Huey just looks up, says, can he just chill, man?
Yeah,
he's
please.
So frustrated with the situation.
This is exactly how he was treating Huey. He still does, but like when they first met, it was the same thing. Just, just be an asshole.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get the Oi Frenchie, don't get caught, never do, and then fade to the flashback.
Of when he got caught. He's literally sitting in the interrogation room, and in walks Mallory, and what does she say? Like, weaponized Xanax.
So cool.
So insanely cool.
The grenades you used on Behemoth during the bank heist. Assumedly, this is the repercussions or the fallout of the bank heist from the first scene.
Yes.
So it went wrong. They got caught. Weaponized Xanax. Yeah, Behemoth, like, his power stems from his rage. He's kind of like the Hulk, I guess. And he just threw Xanax at him so he couldn't get angry.
It's pretty genius.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of way Frenchie thinks. That's why he is one of the boys. That's what he does. But Mallory starts rattling off these names because Frenchie denies. He's like, fuck you. What about Cold Snap 2 months ago or Mal Chemical before that? You have a trail of taking out these soups. I could use a guy like you.
So cool.
Mallory says, you're looking at 20 to 25 years or you could work for me. And Frenchie is standoffish. He still says, fuck you.
Yeah, he says, madam, fuck you.
Love Frenchie. Frenchie's the man. But sticking to his guns until Mallory brings up, well, that's too bad for you and your friends Sherry and Jay. They're looking at, 30 years in Supermax in Colorado.
Yeah, we have like the head of the Aryan Brotherhood in there. Like some other.
She's going to send his friends to the worst imaginable prisons. Frenchie says, you can't do that. Mallory just laughs.
I love that.
I can do whatever the hell I want.
She just looks at him and then just does the scoff. We're like, and then starts laughing, gets up and walks away. Like, she can do whatever the fuck she wants, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, wait, what work do you do? And then she goes in, closes the door.
How much time you got? My goodness. Mallory has been really good this season. I did not think after the first season how we left her that we were going to get as much as her as we have.
I didn't think we were going
to
get
anything. I honestly was thinking the same thing as I was watching. I was like, I totally expected Mallory to just not be a character really, honestly, anymore. Like, she kind of helped out Butcher, did her part, came to amends with him, and kind of left. And I honestly wasn't expecting to see her so soon. And yeah, she's been doing a great job.
By reputation, I always considered her in my head as obviously the former leader of the boys and the creator of the boys, but probably a better leader than Butcher ever was. Like, had her shit together more, treated the people better, was the best leader for the boys.
Absolutely.
I 100% agree.
A boys legend.
I hope she comes back into the boys permanently. That would be sweet. But
she's too old. I don't know.
Well, she does have a line later. We'll get to it. So we get to Stormfront and Homelander, and they're kind of walking on the movie set. And Homelander's like, "Hey, like, come into my van real quick." Or not my van. It sounds like he's a fucking
come into my van. I got some chocolate.
My trailer.
My trailer. That's what
I have a surprise for you. He says, but he says it kind of. I've got a surprise for you.
Yeah, basically. His penis. So she's like, "No, like, I have to go to Vault Tower. I have to see my social guys." And Homelander's just like,
he's pissed.
Blah, like, come on, blow it off. Like, come on, let's just go in real quick. And he is basically just can't take no for an answer.
This is like his control freak, inner control freak just coming out. He's just like, he really wants her inside the trailer, and she's just, she can't.
She's like, "Yeah, like, give me 20 minutes. So I'll be right back. And then you can do me wherever," or something
you
like that.
"You can surprise me wherever you want." She brings close to surprise me back in. Homelander says, "Oh, okay." Then he creepily walks inside, stands in his trailer in the dark. But we find out that his surprise was a bouquet of flowers for Stormfront with a little XO Homelander on it.
It's thanks for a great day.
Oh man, of killing a dude.
Am I feeling bad for Homelander?
I said that to Emily.
I definitely did not feel bad. I was like, this is creepy. Like, they just started banging and he's about to basically propose, like, on the spot.
That's giving a girl some flowers. That's just chivalry.
Thanks for letting me fuck you. Like,
over a dead body that we just killed.
I don't know. It was weird to me.
But no, B-Toms, I 100% agree. I was like, what incredible writing that I feel bad for Homelander right now. Yeah. This dude who just doesn't give a shit about anybody. Like, I actually feel bad because he was going to do something nice and it backfired. And then I realized everything he's done. I was like, no, fuck it.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, it didn't last long.
There was a sympathetic few seconds.
But moving on to the good stuff, we go back to the boys at the Sage Grove facility. We see in the distance, Annie kind of burns them through the wire fence.
So real quick, I just want to hop in. Mm-hmm. This is another little detail that the show puts in that is just so incredibly cool that they do it, because there's absolutely no need. Butcher's on top of this van and watching them through a scope of his sniper. And as Starlight burns the fence and gets them in, she uses her little flash powers. Butcher is looking away through, like, the scope, looks away, and he's like, "Oh god, that was bright."
Yeah,
and he was like, "Yeah, they're in." The fact that they actually made him look away is, like, so cool.
I thought that too when the scene came up. I was like, it was nice that they actually, you know, address the physics of the world.
Yeah, a weird realism in this not real at all world.
Do we expect anything less from this show at this point?
No, so good.
No.
They've been money with it.
So they get into the center and they get to a gurney. It's MM, Frenchie, and Kimiko. Well,
before that, isn't that before? Like, I think this is when Annie's, like, walking back to the truck.
It kind of splits. So we establish that Butcher, Huey, and Annie are staying by the van.
Yeah, we'll
and then we
going.
Establish Kimiko, MM, and Frenchie. Kimiko and MM are posing as orderlies. Frenchie's on the gurney, also in orderly garb. But, and then we flash back to Annie. Okay.
That was a little funny scene, how Frenchie says to Kimiko, "Get on," meaning of the gurney, and Kimiko doesn't move. She's like, "No, you get on, you fucker."
That was great. Yeah, I like that a lot.
And then, yeah, so we get back to the van, and Butcher's hopping down from the van. Starlight puts up a hand to help him. He just ignores it completely and jumps down. So she's like, "All right, like, it's time to fucking talk about this. Let's square this away. You always hate me." Basically,
Huey tries to say this isn't the time or the place. She's ready to have it out. She says, "I think this is the perfect time and place. This is long overdue," and justifiably so, because Butcher has been irrationally just way over the top mean to her for too long. This had to happen. She calls him out for saying, "What you hate about me is in my blood. You think I'm subhuman just because I'm a soup," which is true.
Yeah.
She has been ride or die for the boys ever since she has been introduced to Butcher, and Butcher's just been a jerk.
And we see this too a little bit, like briefly beforehand, when Annie breaks them in and she's like walking back to the truck. Butcher has her in the sniper scope and he's aiming at her head, like unclicks the safety and he's ready to fire.
Forgot about that.
I'm thinking in my head, like, because he turns the safety back on, so he's not going to fire. But I was just in my head, I'm just thinking, like, Butcher's got to be thinking about his wife and his kid and how he's thinking, like, my wife wants me to change. This is the kind of thing that I need to realize, like, not all soups are bad. So that's when he, I think, comes to that realization and is like, okay, I'm not going to shoot her in the face. But yeah, and then that's where we get the scene of them arguing again.
And finally, we see that Stormfront, it cuts their fight off, actually, because Butcher is just about to respond to Annie confronting him. Also, Annie calls him out, says, "You're a racist and a bigot," which are pretty big trigger words. Then they are interrupted by something flying overhead. Immediately, I thought it was Homelander, and they were just completely screwed. But it's Stormfront making an appearance.
They would have been screwed if they realized it was Stormfront either.
Well, Homelander, I feel like Homelander has these passive abilities that he can, like, sense people to. Stormfront, they could at least fly under the radar.
Yeah, it's true, because, I mean, he has, like, the x-ray vision, like, the super hearing. It's like, you could have a conversation of him, like, just a whispering and him fly over and then him hear you.
I said it because better chance of hiding from Stormfront,
I guess.
But Stormfront is in the freaking building. That just puts it up to 10 right off the bat.
Clearly not bad. Clearly not with her social media group.
Lie to Homelander.
She literally just told Homelander, "I'm going to social media marketing group," and we know she's now at this psych ward.
Yeah, and it is not a good idea to lie to Homelander.
No,
ask Madeline Stillwell.
That scene coming up is terrifying. Yeah. So we get Frenchie in the gurney, and MM is knocking on this door, yelling at the security guard through the window, like, "Help, help!" Like, he's freaking out. Like, we need an extra set of hands. And he's like, you know, "Go get help." He's like, "No, like, we need your help right now." Opens the door. Frenchie pulls out a gun, says, "Watch it." And the security guard went for his gun, so he got shot. And I was like, wait, like, you guys, like, don't kill innocent people, do you? And then as soon as MM sits down in the chair and looks at all the screens, which, side note, of course, MM, the boss, sits in the chair. He is the director. He takes control.
For sure.
He sits down, and I see, like, what it actually is. It's a prison cell for all these soups that they're trying. And I was like, okay, now I feel less bad that the security guard is dead. He was an asshole.
I also didn't, I just assumed that, like, he had a bulletproof vest on. I don't know why I thought
that. He did, but there was also, like, blood coming. I don't know.
Regardless, he's fucked up.
But yeah, so this whole facility is kind of like the X-Men New Mutants deal.
No, that was exactly what it was.
Yeah, they have these soups locked up in a psychiatric ward, and they are keeping them under wraps, clearly in horrible conditions.
We see some cool powers. We see the one dude who's like basically teleporting all over the room. We see
some cool and some awful powers.
We see the love sausage, man. We see brothers love sausage.
Yeah, that was sweet. Goddamn.
We see some
brothers got love sausage. We saw the corrosive guy who, like, pukes acid. Yeah,
puking acid.
And one dude completely ripping holes into the wall, but he's not getting anywhere.
His hands are just bloody from just trying to bust through the walls with his bare hands.
So obviously this is a prison.
But most importantly, we see a cell with someone performing telekinesis on, like, these orbs, and then an orderly and Stormfront are all in this cell. MM zooms in and kind of turns up the volume on that monitor, and Stormfront, I lost my progress.
Well, I was also, while you think about it, I just want to cut in and say, when you were talking about the girl with telekinetic powers, like, Kimiko is actually kind of watching her very carefully. And to me, that almost seemed like it just instantly reminded of her brother.
Oh, kind of thing.
I'm talking about two different people. That's Cindy. I was talking about the guy that doesn't make it.
Was it just like a random one?
No. So Stormfront, who is later to be revealed as Lamplighter, and this guy who is like a teenage boy, is practicing
levitation of balls or
stuff. We do see this girl with a shaved head sitting cross-legged.
Like, eyeing her up. Like, the camera pans to Kimiko, like, looking at this girl in this room by herself.
We got her name later. Her name is Cindy.
It's Cindy, so, but I just think that maybe there's going to be some kind of connection.
Kimiko did kind of look at her.
Yeah, it was like her attention was solely focused on her, so I'm just wondering if there's going to be a connection between those two later.
So, as Brian was saying, this patient is performing these telekinetic tricks when Stormfront and an orderly walk in, and as soon as Stormfront walks in, MM gets up, goes to Kimiko and goes, it's okay, breathe, breathe. He knows immediately to go look out for her because she's getting triggered. And as this patient is performing the telekinesis, he ends and Stormfront's like, you know, that was good. Any nausea, any headaches? And he says, no. To which Stormfront looks at the orderly and says, we're getting close.
I think we're making some progress here,
Yeah.
But this poor kid just starts making demands and says, I'm not doing any of these dog tricks until I get to see my sister.
Yeah. Can we go home?
You are in any position to make any propagation.
Not even a little bit. And Stormfront very sympathetically says, oh, well, we'll be able to work something out. And no sooner than she has like turned the corner, she shoots Lamplighter a look and it's just like a frown. This poor guy, Lamplighter just cues him up, flicks his lighter, and
does completely his lighter say this titty on it?
Titty committee.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even see the committee. I just saw titty and I was like, why titty?
We saw it last episode. Right, yeah. Okay, titty committee lighter. It's an awesome lighter.
Yeah. It was a really cool Zippo lighter for sure.
But yes, this is the Lamplighter reveal. Awesome reveal, by the way. I'm so glad we're getting to see Lamplighter this episode, but the boys also recognize him, and no pun intended, it's a very incendiary reaction. Yeah. Because Frenchie is just thinking, Lamplighter, that's fucking Lamplighter. I didn't recognize him without the suit and the mask. Fucking Lamplighter. We have to kill him, of course. Yeah. I love what he says. We have to kill him, of course. For Colonel Mallory.
It's so good. I mean, he's just triggered, immediately wants to kill him. MM calms him down, of course, but obviously this is way more shit than they thought they were gonna have to like deal with. Not only is Stormfront there, but Lamplighter's there in a hospital of soups. Like, Jesus.
Two members of the Seven, or former Seven. That's no joke to be dealing with two of them.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
So MM's telling Frenchie, like, we can't deal with this right now. We're here for another reason. They start grabbing either like videotapes or just like computer CPU units, putting them on the gurney, and they're gonna try to smuggle them out and take them down.
Oh, it also is important to mention too that Kimiko like basically has a panic attack the moment she hears Stormfront's voice. Like, Stormfront's talking to Lamplighter, or the psychic guy. And I think it's just important because it does come into play a little bit later.
I think Paul mentioned that, like, MM had to, like, talk her down when Stormfront made an appearance.
Yeah. I just think it was just like a panic attack, right? Just from seeing her and hearing her. Yeah.
But on the way out, Frenchie's on the gurney. MM and Kimiko, still obviously as orderlies, are pushing him down the hall, trying to make a quick exit. But Frenchie just can't contain him himself. And he just stares down Lamplighter as they pass in the hallway. Doesn't blink. And if you're
Lamplighter
on a gurney,
like, has a look on his face that says, like, I definitely know you from somewhere. Well, like, you're not supposed to be.
Well, he's also
here.
A soup and can tell when something's not right at the scene.
Well, he
of
also
a crime.
Did, I mean, he says it later. But
no,
we'll
Dave,
there.
I 100% agree. He recognizes him almost right away.
I think
And his facial expression is like,
he's questioning
wait,
it.
Is that who I think it is? And then he looks back, and that's when Frenchie jumps out with the gun.
Exactly.
Lamplighter turns around with the lighter, is like getting in the stance, and Frenchie, just being a boss, knows how to handle him, slaps the lighter out of his hand, and then has him at gunpoint. But as he slaps the lighter, Lamplighter still does get a shot off, and it goes and destroys a door.
Misdirects it right into the cell door, and that was the wrong cell door to burn up, because
the worst possible
out
one, I think.
But Cindy.
Love Sausage would have been fine if they busted him out. Like, what is that guy going to do? What is that guy going to do? But it's Cindy.
So Cindy comes out, and Lamplighter says to her, like, hey, Cindy, remember that extra Kraft shells and cheese that I gave to you? I like you. Like, let's be cool.
She asked to she obviously recognizes Lamplighter, but she asks MM and Frenchie, you guys are dressed like him. Are you his friends? MM says, we ain't his friends. Fuck his ass up.
That was awesome.
Cindy says something weird like, well, I don't like liars, but she's interrupted by some other security guard that just
shoots her.
Shoots like 10 rounds in her back. She turns around.
Unfazed.
Literally just clutches her fist, and this dude explodes all over the hallway.
It's having flashbacks to the CIA.
Rainer. So,
yeah, Rainer. Like,
well, and that's what I want to bring up, because it was Cindy the soup that did that.
Yeah,
because they were, I don't know if it's this episode or whatever, but they were like, the boys were was thinking it was Stormfront. I'm just like, there's no way Stormfront has that ability. Like, this was clearly something that wasn't Stormfront's power,
but it might be Stormfront.
It could also be,
because Stormfront has her fingerprints all over this facility.
Okay, so I
maybe
see,
she had Order access Cindy, to Cindy, Cindy and forced her to do it.
But yeah, I was having major Rainer flashbacks.
Yeah,
100%.
I think this is the power that did it.
Yeah, right off the bat, I think this is the most powerful power we've seen, right?
Because this is this, it's almost the same power, if not the same, as Kimiko's brother.
I'm just thinking, how good is it at neutralizing other soups like Homelander? Could she do that to Homelander?
That's true.
Obviously, Lamplighter, we kind of tell, is one of a more fragile soup. Like, I think he could die from a gunshot, but Annie has hard skin. Homelander can take a gunshot.
Black Noir.
This would be really, really overpower if she could do that to one of the powerful suits. Yeah.
So I wonder, I think Kimiko's brother was fragile too. Like, he had this power and was fragile, but she clearly is built from the same genetics as Homelander, in my mind.
So she turns around, demolishes the guard. All the boys and Lamplighter immediately turn the other way and run. And then Cindy, one by one, starts cranking all these doors off their hinges.
Yeah.
And of course, out comes all the psychos.
Everyone.
And they are looking to kill some orderlies.
Mm-hmm. So all the boys run back to the security room, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they lock themselves in there. That's probably the safest place in the facility. I think there's an exchange between Lamplighter and Frenchie. Tensions are still high.
Because Lamplighter's like, I'm basically going to the front door.
Right.
You guys aren't coming with
me. Right. He says, only I know the security code, and there's no way I'm going to help you guys escape with me. No sooner does he say that than acid breath guy literally busts through the door, tackles him, and starts like puking acid all over the floor. He dodges the first one, and then Kimiko just one-hands him, like throws him on his back. He pukes up into the air, and then like all the acid gets over his face.
Disgusting.
And it just starts melting.
I was just instantly like, why would your skin not be, because it's like already, I'm imagining when he's vomiting this stuff up, it's touching his face sometimes.
We get a quote later from Lamplighter that leads us to believe that not all soups are created.
Yeah,
equal,
and that's what
obviously.
I think he's one
of the more abomination type of soups.
No,
I mean, we get Cindy, who is like one of the most powerful powers, and then we get fucking Pukey McGee.
Completely agree. He was a mess up compound V patient.
One of the worst possible powers you could have.
Yeah.
So he does get a little burn, a little acid on his arm. So he stands up after they're watching this guy's face dissolve, and Lamplighter goes, okay, you guys can come.
Yeah, Lamplighter finds out real quick that he needs help getting out of here.
Yeah, he wasn't going to handle that on his own.
So then we flash to the other half of the boys, which is Huey, Annie, and Butcher back at the van. Huey sees somebody get exploded
in the
window. He's looking through the binoculars or something.
Perfect.
And blood just splatters all over the window, so he knows something's going on in there, and he starts to get a little panicked. And then I think Annie walks towards Butcher. Butcher's on the phone trying to contact the people in the facility, can't get a hold of them, but there's an escaped patient who was walking past them, and Butcher more or less is trying to let this kid pass and just saying, oi, hey mate, no problem here. Just keep on walking. Yeah, we don't want no issues. We're all friends here. Right. Kiwi gives him a little half smile and wave.
I guess the half smile wave just didn't do it justice.
Yeah, he did not sell the smile.
The patient is like, I don't want them to hurt me again. And to which Butcher's like, we're not going to hurt you. Like, are we?
The patient's justifiably spooked.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing for years, this guy was just know nothing but torture. So he doesn't trust really anybody.
So he does his power, which is basically like
an energy wave, like a shock wave, basically.
Yeah, I don't even know. Just basically a bomb.
Yeah.
It knocks everybody off their feet, and it like tumbles the van over and over. While they're all coming to, Butcher fires 3 rounds into this dude's chest. So
which, those 3 rounds, incredibly grooved right in the heart. Butcher's a good shot.
Yeah.
That was a good shot.
I actually didn't notice that. He's like a Deadpool almost, kind of, a mercenary.
Yeah, he's a boss. But immediately he goes, Huey, and runs over. So yeah, it's good to see this little soft side of Butcher. He cares about Huey. He says fuck off and you're a piece of shit a lot to him, but he cares about him.
Mm-hmm.
So they go over to him. They kind of open the back door. Huey like stumbles out and he's like, oh, I'm fine, I'm fine. And then you look down and he's a huge shard of metal sticking out of his abdomen.
Yeah, he got poked. he got totally stuck with.
I don't know. Maybe he just put that there himself. I don't know.
Also, he's wearing a Billy Joel shirt.
Did not notice that.
It was an album cover. I think The Stranger by Billy Joel, but
that's sweet.
Yeah.
Butcher's yelling at Starlight, like, come on, cauterize it. We got to get him to a hospital. And Starlight's like, I can't. He must have destroyed the battery. I need power and able to use it. To which Butcher's like, it's a pretty fucking shite power, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I didn't know that. And yes, it is a shite power.
I thought the same thing. I was like, this is actually like a huge weakness for Starlight. She is not around any electrical current, she's useless. I mean, I don't.
She's still strong.
She's still bulletproof and strong. Yeah,
but yeah, she still like has those superhuman powers. But yes, her actual power is
useless. In a modern society where electricity runs everywhere, I'm sure finding a location like this is difficult. But still, I think it's a big Achilles heel. Yeah, it's a big flaw for someone who we thought was invincible,
for sure. So she can't cauterize the wound, and Butcher starts scrambling, says, well, then we got to get him to a hospital. And he says, that could take forever. He says, well, I'm not going to just watch him bleed out in front of me. So they literally start hoofing it onto the street. They don't know where they are. And he asks about the others. Butcher says they're on their own.
Yep. Classic, the boys. We got to take care of ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Moving on, we have Homelander back at the trailer. He's just kind of spazzing out internally, looking at this flower arrangement, like moving the card to just the perfect spot. And then you just see on his face, like, things aren't okay with Homelander. Cue a trailer fire. And in the wreckage, we see Homelander just overlooking the scene.
Ashley's in an ambulance. Yeah. She's all like destroyed. And the same assistant comes up to her. And the first thing she says is, don't fucking tell me you still haven't found Starlight.
Yeah.
So that's still going on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Then Stormfront comes flying in, lands next to Homelander. What happened here? Electrical fire.
Yeah.
Like, not died through a tantrum and blew up everything. Electrical fire.
He's asking about the meeting, and she's, you know, playing it off as if it went well, and he's like, you're lying.
Calls her out, says, I was by the tower and nobody saw you there. Where were you, Stormfront? And he's just putting her on notice, knows that she's been lying. And
he got so attached so easily. He's just stalking her, man. I thought for sure after this, Stormfront was going to be like, okay, this guy's a total weirdo.
Well, she tried to say that too. And Homelander said, I just wanted to ask you about your meeting. I was just curious, dude. Feeling bad for Homelander again. She tried to say, you're checking in on me now?
He's so like slick too. When like he doesn't bring it up right away. He just says, how's your meeting? She says, whatever. And then he's like, well, I gotta go. Gotta run lines with whoever. Like, scene 48 tonight. Like,
it's crazy.
A real Magilla. Like, he just doesn't like give it. Like, he's throwing shit out there to distract you. But in the mean, like, back of his mind, he's like, dude, I want to kill you so badly.
And he almost, I thought for a second they were gonna go into battle, because he puts his hand around her neck too, starts like clutching it, not just their normal kinky shit, but like starts clutching it. She's kind of getting a little, this is the first time we see Stormfront like afraid, almost, is in my mind, is what
she
thought.
Did look terrified when he flew away,
which leads me to believe that Homelander's even Stormfront, who is a very, very strong soup, is still like 3 tiers below.
So I think we talked about this a couple podcast episodes too. I was kind of making a case for Stormfront being as strong as Homelander, but I think right here proves that Homelander's top dog.
So we get next scene, and we get Enya plane. Sail away, sail away, sail away. And we get our boy, the Deep, A-Train, and the head of the Church of Collective, who we were introduced to last episode in the commercial. B-Times, do you have his name?
Alistair Adana.
You called it. You said, I think we're going to be seeing more of him. And he definitely, I think, is going to be a big character as well. He came back there at the dinner. And
I think it's a lunch, actually. I think it's the middle of the afternoon.
It is. It totally is.
First thing he says is, Deep, your numbers amongst women have been going up quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
We can already see that this guy just kind of has his claws in Deep, and it's weird relationship between him, the Church of the Collective. We're just starting to get into what this organization is all about.
So as Brian said, they're all at lunch. All three of them have Fresca soda cans.
Oh yeah,
sitting out in front of their plate. So what's his name? Alistair? Alistair?
It's A-I-R, Alistair Adana. Yeah.
So he looks at A-Train. He's like, "Hey, A-Train. So, what's on your mind?" He's like, I don't know. I mean, Deep invited me here.
Really nice lunch.
Yeah, I'm just having a really nice lunch, I guess.
Deep, he's what's on your mind?
Oh, I think fucking A-Train is trying to sabotage my career since the beginning.
Like, what?
He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I'm getting attacked. And Alistair's like, oh, boy, oh, boy. Looked like we got ourselves a nice old truth exchange. A-Train is like, fuck this. I'm out. He gets up to walk immediately.
Yeah.
And Alistair starts reeling him back in with the... He actually cuts pretty deep. He says,
for a man with seven-figure debt, a heart condition, and heavy withdrawal, do you really think you have the luxury to get up and leave from this table right now?
Perfect. I mean...
This truth.
Yeah. First of all, I didn't know he was seven figures in debt. That's news to me.
That's a lot.
There was a line drop earlier this episode when they were talking about A-Train's new anthem. Ashley says, maybe you can use the Prince guitar in the video. And he says, I had to sell it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Good catch.
Yeah.
Okay. So he is going through the shit.
Mm-hmm. But that's the truth. And A-Train says, how do you know this? Did the Deep tell you this? And it flashes to the Deep, who has this look on his face like, yeah, playing dumb.
I don't know.
Money. But Alistair Adana says, hey, the church knows a lot of things. We were pretty powerful. We have people that are connected. I can help get you back into the seven. And that starts with you just sitting down and listen to Deep tell you his truths.
Yeah,
A-Train reacts exactly how I would react if I was at lunch and halfway through realized I was trying to get pulled into a cult. He just jumps up and then, but clearly this guy is rich and powerful, and A-Train needs that. He needs a little help.
The points too, you know, he's spitting knowledge to A-Train.
I mean, this is exactly what happened to the Deep in episode one. I mean, he, as soon as the Eagle Archer, he's like, oh, you know, tell Carol about your, you know, drinking and the women. The Deep goes, I don't know what the fuck this is, but it's fucking weird and I'm leaving. It's exactly what A-Train does. And he gets pulled back in, and now he's, I swear, if A-Train's going to be under the thumb of the Church of the Collective now,
sipping
too.
On Fresca too.
Bro,
I
was just about to say, he's got to be, this is the second confirmed Fresca A-Train has drank. You know what they say, man, three Frescas, you're done.
You're in the church.
Yeah, you're in the church. So, I love the Deep scenes. They're so fun.
So good.
But moving on to the meaty stuff, we go back to, I call them the facility team. It's just Kimiko, Frenchy, and now Lamplighter and MM. And they're hunkered down in, I guess it's the infirmary.
Yeah, I was going to say, B-Times, you would probably know the best name for this room. Is it the infirmary? It's where they keep all their medicine, like all
it's
their
medicine
stock.
Closet. I don't know.
Dare I call it the Medicus?
They're in the Medicus. Fuck yeah, I'm calling it the Medicus.
Yeah. So they're in the Medicus.
Frenchie eyes light up immediately. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh my God, it's beautiful. I think he's speaking in French a little bit. That's how you know he's excited. So obviously, right away, there's a little standoff. MM is approaching Lamplighter and is basically saying, like, why should we trust you? Like, after you've done this to all these people, and he says, maybe I like to watch people burn.
And that's what sets off Frenchie.
And then Frenchie starts freaking out. He's going over because the subject of Mallory's grandchildren get brought up. He's freaking out. He basically wants And what sets him off a lot, Lamplighter looks at Frenchie and says, "You were telling me the whole night. Why didn't you stop me? Maybe you like to watch people burn too." Mm-hmm. And that's when Frenchie freaks out. He starts swinging at him, speaking in French. And MM grabs him, just holding him back, tries comforting him, tells him, "Breathe, breathe, it's okay." It's so good. First, MM did it to Kimiko when he saw Stormfront. And now Frenchie, when Lamplighter's there, he's just the best.
MM's the dad of the group.
He is.
He's the only one that can keep calm in these kinds of situations.
But that takes us to the flashback of the original boys.
MM.
Awesome to see.
MM is just holding out a ring, showing Frenchie, and he's like, "I think this is the one. All right. I'm going to ask her a question. I don't want to hear no bullshit about how you're going to get tired of the same pussy. This is the one."
And Frenchie hugs him.
Yeah.
He's genuinely happy for her.
Hell yeah. And this is the boys on an old mission. It's Frenchie, MM, Mallory, and Butcher with a slicked back hair.
Yeah.
They're in this warehouse. They're waiting for somebody. Butcher looks serious as hell looking out the door. Mallory is like, you know, "Congrats, MM. Like, oh, let me see." It brings it over, shows it to him. Frenchie's like, "The bachelor party, I'm going to throw you. How do you feel?"
Strippers.
Yeah, how do you feel about transgender strippers? And MM's like, Hershey strippers aren't really my thing, with or without nuts.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about a golf trip. Do you golf?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Butcher's like, "Oi." So they all get all serious. And all of a sudden, this dude in the hood and goggles and a giant staff of the lamp and on fire walks in.
It was a cheesy costume.
So cheesy.
Lamplighter. Yeah,
and they let him know it. He puts his lamp on the ground, does a little thud, and then they just go, start chuckling.
He doesn't look like a member of the Seven. Like, he is right here. Not. And it's like, if I saw that superhero, I'd be like, this guy is not strong. But obviously he's a Seven.
He has a really cool power, actually. But yeah, he looks lame.
So they're all laughing and he's like, What the fuck are you laughing at? And Butcher's like, "Oh, sorry, mate, but you look like one of them baton twirlers." And MM corrects him and goes, "A majorette." He's like, "Yeah, a majorette." That's the second time MM has done that this season. The first time was in the car with Huey and Starlight. And Starlight saying, Huey saying to Starlight, "You can do that voice shaky thing."
Vibrato.
The vibrato. He's doing a majorette. I just love MM so much.
Got a history of singing.
So Mallory walks up to Lamplighter and says, shows him pictures on her phone, says, "You look good in these." Essentially just says, "From now on, you're going to tell us everything that goes on in the tower." They have dirt on him, pictures of him up to no good, and now he's their bitch, essentially.
He tries to threaten them a little bit, like the flame on his lamp gets all high, and Mallory's face doesn't change. She looks at him and says, "Please don't pretend like you have a choice." Yeah.
I also liked that when Mallory says, "You're going to tell us everything that goes on in the tower," Butcher says, "Especially with regards to Homelander."
Yeah.
Because in this flashback, that must have been when he was like a new recruit to the boys, and he was like definitely fixated on Homelander.
He is like prime time. I want nothing but Homelander's head on a plate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is obsessed with killing him.
Yeah. But like you said, Lamplighter, you know, flares his lamp. Mallory says, "It's funny that you think you have a choice in this." Lamplighter leaves. Mallory voices her reservation, saying, I don't really like it. You shouldn't back an animal into a corner like that." Looks at Frenchie and says, "Frenchie, don't let him out of your sight."
Yeah, that kind of makes me think, was that like Butcher's idea when she said, like, the whole blackmailing him? Because when she says, like, "I don't like it, like, I don't, what you said and Butcher's like, "Whatever, like, we've got him by the balls now," or whatever, "he's our bitch."
Unclear,
but
I don't know. They all agreed on the plan.
Yeah, so we can't even really blame Butcher. But yeah, as you said, she says, "Frenchie, don't let him out of your sight." We met him, runs off,
which ends the flashback for now. That takes us back to the van squad, which is Huey, Annie, and Butcher is the third one there. And they are coming out of the woods. Well, Annie comes out of the woods first and kind of flags down a car and says, "Hey, my guy, I'm going to need you to get out of the car."
Mm.
And then in the distance, it's Huey and Butcher. Huey, obviously in rough shape right now, kind of limping out. And this guy says, "Hey, listen, I'm not going to just give you my car. We're in the middle of nowhere. I can drive you to a hospital. Butcher says, no problem. I'm FBI. Left my badge in me other pants. And this guy,
he's like, call my boss.
Yeah, this guy is not having any of it. And Butcher says, oh, okay. Starts walking away and flashes his gun. But before he can pull out his gun, this random dude pulls out his gun, says, this is a stand your ground state. Like, don't fuck with me. It points the gun at Butcher. Annie doesn't want things to escalate, but we know Butcher. He allows them to escalate, and Annie takes care of business and just kills this guy. Accidentally, yeah. But kills this
Does
guy.
Does she kill him?
She shoves him to save Butcher because the guy is about to pull a trigger because Butcher's an idiot and just keeps on advancing. He's like, you're not going to do shit. Just give me your keys. Such an unfortunate circumstance. The nicest guy pulled over to be nice, to help somebody out. And after everything that is thrown at him with like Starlight saying, get out of your car. He's like, yeah. I can drive you to a hospital. I'm not going to give you my car. Like, incredibly nice guy. But when he pulls the gun, he's like, you know, this guy like is dead, almost dying. This guy's not even American. Like, how do I know who you guys are? Incredibly logical. Agree 100%. But of course, you know, Butcher is a dick, advances to him. The guy pulls the trigger. Starlight pushes him. The guy hits his head on the pavement, starts bleeding. I mean, Starlight rushes over to check his pulse, but the blood is already starting to pool around the back of his head.
Yeah, he's dead. Mm-hmm. And Annie, we know Starlight, she didn't want to kill the guy, but she did. And that's tough. But now they have a power source, which is this guy's car. And Butcher acts on his feet, says, now you can cauterize the wound. They get Huey's wound cauterized, but it still won't hold for long. They get in the car. Unfortunately, this guy had a car seat in the back seat, so he was a dad, which makes Annie feel that much worse. But they're on their way to the hospital, and Huey has his wound cauterized.
Yeah, just so sad. That brings us to the facility crew. They're still in the Medicus.
We see some of this Zanny bomb action going into play from Frenchie.
Yeah. MM's like, shopping. Now's a good time to go shopping. And Frenchie goes, why not? And duh, this is good. Like, we can use all this medicine and drugs to make a bomb that can stop them.
Yeah, a soup knockout bomb is essentially what they're making. But Frenchie and Lamplighter have another interaction where Frenchie essentially says, after the night that Mallory's grandkids burned, we went into hiding. We were underground for months and there was no retaliation. Like, nobody ever came for us. And Frenchie says, why didn't you rat us out? Essentially.
Yeah. He's saying, why are we alive? Like, it doesn't make sense. And Lamplighter's, you know, like, you're nobody. Like, where we didn't want to waste time on you. You're just a nobody little person. And French is like, no, that doesn't make sense. Like, I don't think you told them. And the Lamplighter's getting like defensive. He's like, no, like, what are you talking about? And Frenchie's coming at him. He's saying things like,
calling him a monster.
You're an animal. And he's like, I'm not an animal. He's like, well, you burn children alive. Only an animal would do that. Like, you tell me what you are. And Lamplighter finally goes, I didn't know. He says, I didn't know. That was supposed to be your boss in that bed. I didn't know they were kids. And all of a sudden, you're like, holy shit. You can see like the sadness in his eyes and like self-hatred.
Frenchie can recognize it too. Frenchie kind of takes a pause and is like, damn, like that sucks.
Like, I feel bad for this dude. That's literally burning people alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a big revelation because for the entire series, we've been making Lamplighter out to be like a stone cold villain who burned the grandkids alive, but there's more to it than that.
And he looks Frenchie like right in the eyes and he's almost crying and he's saying, why didn't you stop me? Like, I wanted you to stop me so badly looking back, like you should have stopped me. And that's when we jump back to the Frenchie flashback, correct?
And it's Frenchie tailing Lamplighter. Lamplighter has some arm candy around, walking the red carpet into like a club party or whatever.
His non-staff arm. He's got some eye candy.
Yes, of course. But Frenchie's just tailing him from the other side of the street, smoking a cig when his phone rings and it's Sherry on the line telling him that J-O-D'd. She's freaking out. Frenchie's trying to say, well, take him to the hospital. And Sherry doesn't even give him a chance to respond. She says, "Serge, come right now," and then hangs up.
Yeah.
Frenchie doesn't get a word in edgewise, and he's under the impression that either his friend is OD'd and going to die, because it doesn't sound like Sherry is going to take him to a hospital, or do I stick with the mission and tail Lamplighter? It's an impossible situation.
Yeah, seriously.
But Frenchie leaves, and he gets to Jay in time and, you know, brings him back too out of the overdose. But he says, "I have to leave right away. You know, I have to get back to what I was doing." Sherry and Jay don't understand, and they get pissed at Frenchie, which I did not appreciate.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? He literally was in the middle of something, ran back, saved Jay.
Yeah.
After giving him CPR, useless Sherry was standing
there. Me versus you guys this episode, because I was on their side. I was like, dude, whatever you have going on right now, your best friend is fucking dying. You better fucking stay with him right now. Like,
he came back and saved him on the drop of a dime when he was already clearly like busy. And I understand that like that kind of takes priority over everything. But as
you're choosing your job over your friend.
Yeah, but his job has lives at stake. Like, he was tailing this person so that he doesn't do anything dangerous. I was so Team Frenchie.
I understand that they probably don't know what he was doing. He can't tell them because it's like super secret CIA shit or whatever. So I get why they're upset. But I mean, come on. Like, he did go save you. Like, you are okay. All he said to Sherry was like, "All you have to do is make sure he doesn't fall asleep. Keep talking to him." And Jay looked up and said, "Serge," like all sad. And he was like, "I'll be back." Like, you know, which real quickly, this is the first. All right. Serge or Sergey?
Serge.
Serge.
Serge. Yeah.
Serge.
That is his actual name.
Yeah.
So it's not just what's it called? Like a title to call somebody, like a
nickname. I think Frenchie is a nickname. His real name, Serge, but like only the homies call me Serge.
Well, this is the first time we've ever heard that.
Yeah,
which
it's actually funny because that is a trivia thing. He's actually never in the comics. He was never given a name, so fans were pretty happy to see that he is actually has a name in the show. Yeah,
I mean, because
which is crazy to think, because I mean, I'm assuming the comics are done. If all the comics are done, and like they never just touched on the fact that Frenchie has a name. I don't know if there was a reason to it, but
yeah, I mean, in all the wanted posters all going on the news, it says like this unknown man. So it's cool that, you know,
true. We've actually, yeah, it's always been unknown. We don't like someone saw a picture of Frenchie. I forget what episode. And they're just like, "I have no idea like who that person is."
So that's pretty
off the grid.
Good man. On that scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Moving on, we get the van squad. I guess now they're the like Hyundai squad or whatever. Yeah, this guy's car squad. But Butcher gives Annie as much of a compliment as he can and says, I appreciate what you did back there.
Mm-hmm.
And Annie opens up and says, "You know, all I could think was, why'd you pull the gun, you stupid fuck?"
That's what I was thinking too at the time. I was like, why'd you pull the gun?
She says, "Maybe once I would have cried over him, but now he was just another person in our way."
And then Butcher gives the look to her and she's like, "I don't want your look of approval. I don't need it."
Yeah.
She's like, no, like, don't do that. He's like, "What?" He was like, "That quiet look of respect." Like,
that was the best.
I don't want any of that, man. Like,
another addition from the comic, apparently in the comics as well, Butcher and Annie never meet. Never have any conversation. So this is all just off the dome from the writers.
One of us is going to have to read the comics.
I think I want to do it. Yeah, I want to do it after, because I feel like there are a lot of tie-ins.
Huey's got like little whimpers as the scene's going on, because like he still literally has a shard of metal in of him. And the scene ends with Annie saying like, "We're nothing alike."
Yeah.
But in reality, they're a lot alike.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she's done a lot of growing. She's maturing, and she's not obviously the same as Butcher. She's more nice, obviously, but she's maturing to the point where she can just do these things, just focus on what needs to be done, and that's it.
The fact that she felt nothing from killing that innocent man, I was like, dude, what the fuck? Like,
she's just starting to think like one of the boys.
I mean, I would be
mad. If
you're
part of the boys, you gotta be able to feel nothing when you kill someone.
No, don't kill innocents.
From how when Huey killed Translucent to how he is now, it's
all right, well, Translucent's a terrible person. This is an innocent.
He felt bad though. I mean, when he blew up the dynamite, I'm pretty sure it was an accident too.
That was his first kill too.
No,
first kill. Yeah. He was freaking out. Yeah.
He did on purpose. That wasn't an accident.
No, he had the trigger in his hand. He pulled the trigger.
But when he pulled it,
I'm
like, he had like, he was surprised.
He was like, holy shit.
Like,
yeah, I just did this.
Yeah.
Are we good on that scene? Because we have a doozy coming up next with the other half of the boys that are still in, what's the place called? Shady Grove?
Sage Grove Center
or something like that.
So Frenchie is done with the bomb. And then we get Lamplighter kind of just spilling the beans on what the operation here is at the facility.
Like, what's the word?
Provoked?
Yeah, unprovoked. He just kind of says, you know, this, they're trying to stabilize the V. They're like, MM says, explain. Like, out of nowhere. It's not like they were, like...
This whole episode has been a heart-to-heart between Frenchie and Lamplighter, and I think Lamplighter is starting to understand that the boys are the good guys.
Hell yeah.
Which is awesome, because I would love for Lamplighter to be, you know, leaning towards the boys or sympathetic to their cause. Anyway, he says, Vought is using the center to try and stabilize the V. Infants handle it best, but with adults, sometimes you get, you know, powers, sometimes you get a freak, sometimes they just explode. Vought is trying to stabilize it so that you put the V in an adult arm, anyone, anytime, anywhere, you get a solid soup, solid powers. They don't tell me why, they just make me burn the evidence.
Yeah, MM had a good line in there where he was like, why would they do that? That literally fucks up their entire business plan, that fucks up their movies, fucks up their advertisements, it fucks up literally everything. And he was like, I don't know, that I just am here to dispose of the evidence.
We know why. Now we do. We learn later in the episode. Yeah,
fucking insane.
Yeah, we'll get to that, though. Moving on, though, Frenchie, finally, we got the flashback. So we knew at this point, but Frenchie shares with the group that where he was that night is his friend OD'd. He left to save him for a half an hour. And in that time, Lamplighter got away and did the deed.
What I really like about this scene, when he says, you know, my friend OD, that's where I was gone for 30 minutes, came back, you were gone. The first thing Lamplighter says is, did your friend live?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Lamplighter listened, cared, and literally asked a question and wanted to make sure his friend was okay.
He's making a come around.
I almost think that he asked that as a, was it worth it? Like, what was the end result? Like, you leaving cost two lives, did you at least save one life?
Yeah, okay, I see that.
And Frenchie says, I did, but I never saw Jay again. I never saw my friend again, and he died a couple months later from another OD.
And to go back to the point,
horrible.
Yeah, that was horrible. But and to go back to the point, Mother's Milk says we would have let you off the hook at the time, only making my case saying, like, you should have just fucking stayed. Like, they were understanding. At least I feel like maybe only MM would have been understanding. Maybe at the time Butcher and Mallory would have been like, do the job. But MM was at least, you know, trying to be there for.
And MM says, after all these years, why we would have let you off the hook if you had told us that. Like, context is everything. And Frenchie hits him with a, what makes you think I want to be let off the hook?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the look that they're giving each other, like,
it's a sad look. It's like just a look like I'm addicted to this lifestyle, kind of, is
dude,
what I thought.
Frenchie's just like me, man. He will like punish himself more than anybody else ever could.
Yeah.
Whenever he does something bad.
And now we get the cock attack.
Yeah, we got some knocks at the door. MM's the first one on the scene to kind of like investigate. And we get this tentacle looking thing smash through the little window and just wrap around MM's neck, like try and pull him through the door. And it's Kimiko that like
bust the door open.
Basically. Yeah, Kimiko whips open the door and just punches whatever the guy behind the tentacle is. He goes down with a nice bossy imprint on his forehead.
Love sausage, man.
And this
is a name.
And this tentacle just starts retreating back to Love Sausage's pants.
Yeah. Oh god.
And MM is just thinking, was that his
was his fucking dick?
Was that his dick? And Frenchie's like, don't be so close-minded.
Yeah. Frenchie's the homie.
I was gonna ask, did you guys know that it was his dick until it started going up his pants?
Oh, I knew, like, once it came out of there, I knew, because I remember seeing the dude with the schlong.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like,
I was like, That's a penis. A giant uncircumcised penis.
Yeah, and that's what that sold it to, the uncircumcised penis.
I was like, what's going on here? And then as the scene unfolded, I thought to myself, boy, that tentacle does have a particularly phallic look to it.
Yeah.
Emily was like, no way. I'm like, I'm telling you, that's a penis. Yeah. She was like, no way.
I knew right away. I saw that thing bust open. I was like, that's a dick.
Oh my God. That man's poor wife.
Yeah,
honestly. That man does not have a wife. Yeah, there's no 100%, 0% chance.
So we get them going through the hallways. They're trying to get out the front door, and then they're faced with Cindy.
They throw the bomb.
Go ahead.
And Cindy, they throw the bomb, and all run behind the wall, and Cindy immediately crushes it, and it does absolutely nothing. So Cindy's approaching them. MM's like, dude, Frenchie, I thought you said that would work. Frenchie goes, I said I thought it would work.
The boys are scrambling.
Mm-hmm. And right then,
boy, they have never been so happy to see Stormfront come through the front doors.
I was going
to
say,
I don't know if you would be. No, I wouldn't say that is the right way to say that.
It's the last person you want to see.
I see what you're saying.
It's the last person you want to see, but you're grateful that they're there.
Enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes.
For this split second, for like that quarter of a second where she's killing,
without the bomb, there was 0% chance they were escaping from Cindy.
Yeah.
So it worked out for them. Anyway, Stormfront comes in and electrocutes Cindy. So Stormfront was not afraid of Cindy. She handled that business real quick. And there's kind of this moment where Lamplighter is exchanging looks with MM, Frenchie, and
she's calling out for Lamplighter. She's like, Lamplighter, correct. Where are you?
And they are literally in the hallway adjacent to this open area space that Stormfront is in. And they're kind of hidden behind the wall and they're exchanging looks.
MM's like, don't go out there.
I thought he was like, don't spill the beans. Like,
I thought he was just going to say, don't go out there.
But Lamplighter walks out, and I was holding my breath. This is showing what Lamplighter is
holding my breath.
This is showing what he's really about, and he covers for them.
Yeah, that was
really well on his feet too.
Incredible. But the way he walks out to like confront, like he's got his hands in his pocket. I'm like, dude, you are just asking to get killed. Like all this, like there are people dead everywhere. The place is blown to smithereens, and you just walk out casually, like hands in the pocket, like, hey,
yeah,
this happens.
He comes out, I'm here, and she goes, I just killed. What was it? Six patients outside, or test subjects, she calls them.
Mm. Just what the fuck's going on?
Yeah, and he was like, Dr. Carlton got the propanol dose wrong again.
Well, where's Dr. Carlton now?
He's there. In the hallway, in the cafeteria, and a little bit of everywhere.
I like that line. That was a good line, too.
And he immediately, real good, like, starts walking away from the boys. So he's covering for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She goes, all right, I'm going to go see if there's any more that escaped.
Clean up the mess.
Yeah, you.
He reunites with the boys.
Yeah.
Right. So that takes us back to the other half of the boys, Van Squad. Hyundai Squad.
Yeah, come on. You changed it.
The squad formerly known as Van Squad. Yeah. At the hospital. And Huey's going to be okay. Yay. We knew Huey was going to survive.
Yeah. Well, Starlight does say the doctor said they're going to need a few days for the medicine to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
So they're stuck there for a few days. Butch is like, we don't have a few days.
I think the whole Huey injury was just such a good plot device to give Butcher and Annie one-on-one time.
It's perfect. I mean,
it was so necessary because if Butcher had an audience, he would have kept his steely demeanor and been an asshole. But if it was just them, that's the only way we could start peeling back the
layers. I didn't really think about that. Yeah, it's so true.
And I can't get over the fact that probably my favorite episode of the series, as I've said, had barely any Huey.
Yeah,
he was crazy.
He was passed out basically the whole time.
There was just so much going on. But we're at the hospital, and I like this scene between Butcher and Annie.
They connect on just roasting
just
Huey.
Shitting on Huey.
It's so good.
She's like stroking his head while he's not knocked out and says, she starts chuckling to herself.
And he's like, the strawberry. Yeah.
L'Oreal for kids, strawberry smoothie. I've seen the bottle. Hateful shit.
And she's like, oh, this Axe body spray. Like, that's must be what Vin Diesel smells like.
And Butcher, this is one straight out of like a dad's playbook. He says, every morning he slathers his bum with creamy desitin. I swear he's got rashes down there. What an asshole.
He's so good.
Laughing together.
He's like, I don't want to know that.
We see the relationship starting to develop.
It's blossoming.
It's so nice because Annie, basically this season, is being introduced into the boys, right? And we already know they had an MM bonding episode. You know, are you dry wiping? Are you fucking dry wiping?
Yeah, so, they have. She has been bonding with everyone.
Starlight and MM are good. Starlight and Kimiko are good.
Yeah. Starlight and Huey, obviously.
They're real good. They're banging. Frenchie's the only one, but Frenchie probably loves her. Frenchie's the best.
They had that scene this episode where he was taking the tracker out of the neck. They seem chill there. They were like joking. Who's going to hate French? Come on.
So Butcher's basically the last boy. He's the last member who really can't accept her. So this episode is just them getting closer and closer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Next scene.
I mean, the last line there, she was like, you know, he never gives up on you though, right? And they say he's too good for either of us. And Butcher's like, yeah, he really is.
And he is. He's like the resident good guy. Well, MM is our resident good guy, but Huey is also the canary. He's the canary. So moving on, we have a quick Maeve and Elena scene. Maeve is in the shower. Elena says, hey, I'm trying to postmate some sushi. What do you want? Where's your phone? Maeve can't hear. She's in the shower. So Elena just takes it upon herself to get the phone. The phone is attached to the GoPro that the Deep got to Maeve earlier. And Elena sees the footage from the ship or the plane going down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she hears Maeve saying, at least let's take these two. Homelander's in the background yelling, what, so they can tell the rest of the world we let the rest of them die? Like, absolutely not. The guy saying, like, you know, bye to my wife. The guy who's taking the actual video is saying, like, you know, Homelander and Maeve, they left us. They're abandoning us to all die. And Elena is just watching this, not saying a word.
Yeah.
She doesn't say a word for the rest of the scene. So Maeve comes out and she was like, oh, you were talking about Postmates? Turns the corner, sees the phone, and is like, oh, shit.
And honestly, I just keep putting myself in the hypothetical that superheroes are real. Imagine being told by the media that superheroes are great. They're superheroes, you know, they are literally heroes. And then seeing a video of Superman letting a plane crash and people, you know, taping these videos of themselves just resigning themselves to death and Superman won't help them.
Yeah,
that's Elena right now. That would be insane.
And especially if it's your girlfriend partaking in this acts of treason.
So did we think that Elena was like pissed at Maeve for not doing anything in the video? Or do we think that she was just like,
I think it's both, like
just shocked.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just both. I think she was like just expecting Maeve to be this perfect woman for her, like good person. And then just seeing her just turn her back on all these people. Like, cause I think in the video too, they clearly see like kids hugging like each other and all this stuff. So she's
Elena literally doesn't say a word for the rest. She's just staring at Maeve. Maeve is saying, like, what? Like, I can explain. That's our out. I'm going to show it to Homelander, and he's either going to leave us alone or I'm going to upload it to CNN.
I think until she does that, Elena's not coming back into the picture.
Yeah.
If Maeve ever does release it.
She goes on later. She's like, I was scared. Like, Elena doesn't say anything. She's just looking at her with these, like, amazed eyes. And she's like, I was scared. I didn't know what to do. I know I should have stood up to him. She's not saying a thing still. She goes, why are you looking at me like that?
I think she's trying in her head, trying to piece everything together. Like from what Maeve is saying, what she's seeing in the video. I think she's just trying to come to her own conclusions. And she just can't say anything.
It's impossible to rationalize it unless you know Homelander behind the scenes, which Elena doesn't. So it's just like two plus two doesn't equal five.
She does know because Maeve has told her, but she doesn't like, she hasn't seen it.
She doesn't have the proof of concept.
Exactly.
Yet.
And that's the end of the scene. I mean, Elena doesn't say anything. I don't know how they ended.
That was a short one, but a big one for Maeve and Elena.
Mm-hmm. Next one we get is
Hyundai Squad.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not the Hyundai Squad. It's
you're right. It's the other.
It's
squad.
The facility squad. MM's on the phone.
Now former facility squad.
I guess it's the ambulance squad.
I'm just making it difficult.
So MM goes, yo, it was a close call, but Huey's gonna be all right. Frenchie, oh, bien. Hey, tell Butcher about the thick cock around your neck. And MM's like, yo, shut up. Oh, that was nothing. That was just Frenchie being Frenchie.
Yeah.
And he kind of goes off to on a talk on the phone with Butcher.
Then we get Frenchie and Kimiko.
Yeah, yeah. This is a nice scene.
And it's finally Frenchie had to apologize. There's been too much tension between those two, and they're brother and sister, man.
I like it a lot, man. I've wanted
the great relationship. He knew he was way out of pocket and trying to kiss her. He says, "Hey, I'm sorry. For a long time, I was trying to save you because I thought it would make up for the things that I've done, but you never asked to be saved. I know now that you can't absolve me of my sins, so I'll leave you alone." It was good. Perfect. I think that's all he needed. Well, that's all Kimiko wanted. The boys are back.
Yeah. Then, everybody's happy.
The fung has been shwayed.
Except, not happy for long.
Yeah, I was going to say. And then all of a sudden, a SUV rolls up. MM's, I got to go.
SUV squad?
Solo SUV.
Solo squad.
Mallory walks out. MM, Colonel.
Colonel.
She goes, "Where is he?"
So I thought it was interesting. Frenchie starts offering his condolences, and he said, "I know I didn't make the funeral, and these past years, I wish I could have seen you." Has he not seen Mallory since the incident?
They definitely have. I'm pretty sure they've seen each other. I was thinking the same thing, but I just think that maybe, like...
I don't think they have.
I don't think they have.
I'm Butcher.
Mallory has seen Butcher only, and I feel like that's the only one, and Huey, but I can't remember Frenchie seeing in the series Mallory.
Butcher brought it
that's
up.
Crazy, if that is true, yeah. In
the Haitian King's hideout, Butcher comes back and said, "I just had a meeting with the Colonel." And Frenchie's like, "Oh, Mallory?" But you never actually see them together. This is like the first time probably since.
Yeah, we'll check on that, right. but I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
And poor Frenchie. I mean, he's pouring his heart out to her. He was probably thinking of what he would say in this moment for years and years and years.
Mallory doesn't give a fuck Mallory about just what he's saying.
Where is he?
Her eyes are seeing red, and she's obviously looking for Lamplighter. I guess they called her because they wanted her to be able to confront him.
Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, Lamplighter's in the ambulance, and a really intense scene where Mallory finally gets this confrontation.
The doors open up. She freaks out. She pulls a gun. "Why isn't this man restrained?" He says, "No, it's okay. I want it to come." So Lamplighter is...
He says all the right things in this scene, I think. Like, because she's pointing the gun at him, too, and he's like, "Honestly, like, you'd be doing me a favor. Like, honestly, just shoot me."
Yeah, he says, "Let's..." Well, Mallory... is freaking out, can barely hold it together. She says, I thought I was over this. I thought I was past this. It turns out I'm not at all.
Yeah, we had to get that quote.
And he says, "You know, same with me. Like, let's put it both behind us." And he like kind of sits straightens up in his chair and leans forward and is basically saying, "Do it. Like, shoot me."
Frenchie is the one that begs on Lamplighter's behalf, though. And he says, "You know, Mallory, it won't help you. You would only end his torment. You cannot punish him as much as he punishes himself."
And trust I also like the little bit before that, too. I like when he's just like, "There's no one in this world besides you who wanted him dead more than me." Mm-hmm. Like, I really like that line, too.
And it's the truth.
And when he says, like, "Trust me," this is exactly how Frenchie feels. He hates himself more than anybody else because he left.
He's basically thinking that this is more his fault than it is the actual person that did it. Like, he's blaming himself more than he is Lamplighter in this situation. It seemed like.
Yeah. So when he is laying this all out there saying, you know, nobody can punish him more than himself, it feels like he's speaking about how Frenchie himself feels.
Yeah. To end this scene, Mallory asks, "Well, if I can't shoot him, what exactly do you propose we do with him?"
And
that's the end of the scene.
Dude, what?
Lamplighter is now with the boys?
The boys are going to become the seven
It's going to be split.
So many soups.
Yeah,
let's
list them off. So we got Maeve, the Deep. The Deep is getting A-Train to get in on it, right? And then we got Starlight, Kimiko, and Lamplighter. All if this comes
seven, did you count out seven?
That was seven. A-train. That was weird.
Oh, anti-seven, baby.
Wowee.
That'd be crazy.
If it's gonna come down to like Homelander and Stormfront marching with an we'll get to that in a second.
Let's
cover this
Go to the scene. Okay, so we have Stormfront and Homelander, and they're having it out. There's been rising tensions between them because of Stormfront lying and Homelander just seeing right through her bullshit. And Stormwright comes in, says, "Let me explain," and Homelander says, "Flapping your gums again." Like, all I hear is lies, this, that, and the other thing.
Flap, flap, flap goes that little mouth.
Yeah. And Stormfront gets real serious because Homelander starts threatening. What does he say?
He says, "I was thinking about that conversation we had
where you said you don't break easily. I've been thinking about that part a lot."
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Which makes me think, was he holding back on his laser eyes, lasering her tits?
Probably.
Because
definitely. Yeah. I mean,
he has control over it
because of the bottle.
He heated up the milk.
Yeah.
So I don't think he was going 100%.
Interesting. So it would be interesting.
I just want to see them full out 100% fight.
Well, Stormfront right now might think that she can withstand like Homelander's, like, you know, not full power, but like his laser eyes or whatever. Yeah. Right. Do you think she can? She does look scared.
No, Stormfront knows her place, I think. But
I feel like
all just questions we cannot answer. There's just no way for us to know.
I feel like Stormfront is putting herself a little bit closer to power level of Homelander than it actually is.
I mean, she's definitely the number two hero that we've seen. She's like by far the second strongest. Like, I think it's like tier one, definitely Homelander, tier two, definitely Stormfront, and then like everybody else.
Yeah. Okay, but I digress. So we in these tangents, man. So we get back to Stormfront and Homelander, and she says, "No more lies. I will tell you everything, starting with this." Walks over to a chest. She opens it up. We see the old Liberty uniform in there.
Crazy.
She picks up some pictures and brings it over to him. And this is the picture we saw earlier. It was last episode on Stormfront's desk. That's what Starlight
saw
and thought was her mother.
Yeah.
To which Homelander says, "Your grandmother? No, my daughter."
That was crazy.
Wait, how old are you? "I was born in 1919
in Berlin.
But she says it in the real German.
Berlin. Yeah, and I was going to actually comment on that too, saying like, I like the little subtle, like perfect hit, like accents of German she does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then she starts going back into this wooden box with just all of her old Liberty stuff. And she shows him pictures of her with higher up Nazi personnel, Heinrich Himmler. That's Goebbels. And of course, the most important man in the room, Frederick Vaught.
Yeah. She's wearing a wedding dress and they're underneath a Nazi banner.
Yeah.
We get all of Stormfront this scene. She says,
"This was so great.
Frederick Vaught gave me the first successful V injection. Then we fell in love and he gave me a daughter. He made me and his genius made you, Homelander." Frederick didn't care about all that shallow bullshit and stuff. What he really cared about was, and then she really gets into it. And I have the whole quote, and I think it's important to do kind of her whole monologue here. Is,
hell yeah.
Because it's all important.
The opening line.
Yes. Yeah. "We are in a war for our culture. The other races are grinding us down and taking what is rightfully ours, but we can fight back with an army of supermen millions strong, because this is Vaught's true destiny, and you will be the man who will lead us. You are everything that we dreamed of, so I love you with all my heart. How could I not? Everyone I have ever loved is in the ground, and then I found you, we found each other, and now neither of us has to be alone ever again, and that is the truth."
Dude, I have chills just remembering that scene, because she delivers that speech so perfectly, literally lays everything out on the line. Is just,
it had to be true.
Yeah, this is all, this is me giving you everything that I know, and you better, like, you know, open yourself up, or at least let me be with you.
Homelander grabs her kind of with both hands. You don't really know what's going to happen. And just pulls her in.
Horny
starts
as fuck.
Kissing her.
Yep.
I mean, like, oh my God. Are you kidding me? Like, in a million years, I never would have thought that the show was going to be Nazis trying to take over the world.
Yeah,
like, what?
Yeah, so everything's coming together. We find out that the reason there was those test subjects is because they're looking to form an army of supermen to literally just take out all the minorities of the world.
Yeah,
like, are you kidding me?
Watching season one of The Boys, I never would have thought this would have been turned into essentially a race war, but it is. But it's done so well, it's just executed perfectly.
It makes sense once they started revealing that Vaught was from way long ago, Nazi times. They were doing studies under the Nazi organization. It makes sense, all of this fits. And to just find out that Stormfront is
the center of it.
And Kyle sent in a note to us. He said that Stormfront is not a neo-Nazi. She's a straight up Nazi because she's from 1920. So she is literally from like Hitler's regime.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important. It's I don't know if we mentioned it either, but I think it's important to mention that her and Friedrich Vaught, they were married. Like they were in love with each other.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's why she's so in love with Homelander. Like in one of the quotes in there that Brian just said is, he made me and his genius made you.
Yeah.
Like she is obsessed with him because you are the one to lead us. You are like, what?
But she's obsessed with fulfilling Vaught's vision, and Homelander is the
blonde haired, blue eyed
tool in which she's allowed to do that. So
I thought it was really cool too, just because when they first meet Stormfront, it was probably all just a test to see like how mentally stable Homelander was. But like when they first met, she was just shitting on him left and right, letting him have the business.
She played it cool though. It was all along.
But then once Homelander put his foot down, she was like, okay, this is actually the guy I want to follow and be with. Let me tell him everything that I know.
But we get the Golden Girls theme song playing. Yep. Thank you for being a friend.
Unbelievable.
And our last scene is while the Golden Girls are rolling. We have Cindy hitchhiking down the road.
What's going to happen with her?
The most dangerous soup that we've seen bar Homelander is out and about and just unleashed.
Supervised. Like nobody knows about her.
Affiliation.
Nobody knows about her. Nobody knows where she's going.
She also has that look on her face like, I don't give a fuck. When she has her thumb holding out, her face is like, she's plotting. She's ready to do things.
I hope she's smart. I hope she doesn't just go on like a killing spree of innocent people. I hope she's methodical and has some wits around her. And I don't know what her motivations are, but she has to be fuck Vaught.
I think she's definitely like straight edge. Cause when, like we saw it earlier, she was just like, I don't like liars. Like I think she's going to be kind of like a Stormfront in the fact that like she'll follow what she believes is right. So I can't wait to see what Cindy has to offer.
I mean, what driver? She's walking with her back to the lane, like the passing traffic, and a driver stops after seeing 7 bullet holes in her back, like sweatshirt, which I totally didn't even realize. I thought Cindy was completely submitted by Stormfront. I guess
we all like that was literally the last thing before this scene. The last thing we saw was her dead, like, quote unquote, on the floor electrocuted.
Yeah. And I guess Lamplighter just he was supposed to clean it up and he went with the boys. So Cindy just regained consciousness and went on her merry way.
And no one's been able to take a full blast from Stormfront yet. And she did.
She's the most terrifying fucking
there. That's not true. Kimiko and Kenji got blasted without dying.
Kenji's dead.
Yeah, not from the electrocution. Yeah. And Kimiko has regenerative power, so I mean, maybe not only the best example.
Yeah,
I don't think that's just a lethal kill shot.
No, but I think that goes back to the fragile hero, not fragile hero. Like Kimiko and Cindy are now like they're not fragile because Kimiko obviously takes like we saw her take a bullet earlier.
She might have been holding back too. Stormfront might have some extra ammo in the
regardless,
magazine there.
I'm all in for seeing more of Cindy and what she... This just adds another dimension to the show.
We have 2 episodes left, and I think it's going to be a lot of Huey because we just had probably only 1/3 of an episode of Huey. And
is Black Noir going to come back, man?
Do you think Cindy's going to play a big role the rest of this season, or do you think that's just... I could see them not even mentioning her the next 2 episodes and that just being a third season thing.
Yeah, I was literally just going to say, I think her...
I'd be fine.
Her appearance might be like a season finale kind of thing, and then maybe next season is when we get a little bit more about her.
She's a wild card, and really I love it because she just has no affiliation. Like I said, nobody is keeping her in check, and it's great.
All right, 2 more episodes until we have to wait months and months and months for season 3.
But I have a bank Hail Mary if we want to do it.
Oh,
let's do it.
Because we haven't, so we've we've gone over every like most of the people in the 7 at least for the most part. So time to go to the other end. Let's talk about our boys, the boys.
Let's do it.
So right here we have MM, Frenchie, and Busher, the homies, the boys themselves.
All right. It's clear cut in my head right away. Butcher's getting the axe.
Yep. Okay.
Butcher's getting butchered.
Be on that turn. We're all on that page, but I'll let you finish, but we're all on that page. Yeah.
Butcher's getting butchered. Frenchie's getting the penis, and I'm marrying the shit out of MM. Are you kidding me? The way he would talk to me on the phone. Hey, sweetie. Oh, so true. I'm so sorry, I forgot to tell. Don't you dare watch that episode without me.
This might be an easy bank Hail Mary, but yeah, I agree.
We need to do it though. I think
MM is the most fatherly figure, like by far, out of everyone. Frenchie's a recovering kind of part-time drug addict.
Frenchie's wild though.
Yeah, he's wild, and that would make for a great one night, like just do a bunch of drugs, you know, whatever. But Butcher's obviously getting the axe. That's just.
It's the same. Yeah, nothing the new same, here exactly. For the same reason.
But we just had to do a bang kill Mary.
MM's the best. French. Yeah.
We just did the booth. Let's go. All right. That's going to do it for us. If you like what you heard, we have other episodes covering the 7th and final season of the CW's The 100, Netflix's Cursed, Starz hit series Spartacus, Haunting of Hill House, and much more to come. If you're on the World Wide Web, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to our show on Spotify and Apple. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thank you so much for listening.
Let's go up, dog.